But I still think late June to early July is the highest probability time for gold to bottom seasonally. Then gold tends to rally throughout July, not a big rally, but a few percent. Then August it starts to accelerate. September really accelerates. And so yeah, I'm absolutely looking for gold buying to return and for gold to start moving higher. And I think the single most bullish factor for gold is the fact that we talked about earlier.
Adam Hamilton, how are you?
Doing great, Andy. How are you this morning?
Doing great. Just wanted to have you on. I saw the article first come out on 321 Gold about the gold summer doldrums, as you titled it. I did expect that, and lo and behold, your article came out, which was very fitting. So, yeah, let's talk about the article and what your expectations are in the gold market and in the junior gold market and the equities market.
Yeah, of course. The summer doldrums are really interesting. Most of the time throughout the calendar year, gold has recurring demand factors from around the world. And a lot of them are well known. For instance, in late July, August, even into early September, there's Asian harvest. Like particularly Indian farmers, they figure out how many crops they raise during the year and how much they can sell them for and how much surplus income they generated for all their hard work. So they tend to buy some physical gold to save part of their savings. The Chinese do that as well. Next comes Indian wedding season, September, October. There's a bunch of Indian festivals, and the Indian culture believes it's auspicious to get married. It can increase the odds of successful, lucky marriage. I mean, who wouldn't want that in their lives? Then comes the holidays in the West, Christmas. Men buy gold jewelry for their wives, for their girlfriends, for their daughters, significant others, whatever. But Christmas, New Year's Eve, I think, Andy, is the biggest engagement season of the year. So there's a lot of engagement rings purchased. So Western gold purchases are big that time of year. Then comes Chinese New Year, like into late January, early February. And then there's spring optimism. People just like spring. The days are getting longer than in the Northern Hemisphere, where most of the people of the world are and most of the world's land masses. So people tend to buy gold, buy stocks. There's strong seasonality in all the markets in spring. But then we get to summer and there's just no recurring demand spikes. There's no cultural drivers of demand spikes in gold during June, especially June. There's no seasonal drivers. Like no one's buying gold. It's a big vacation season for many people in the Northern Hemisphere. People kind of check out from the markets in June. I'm sure all your listeners have heard the sell in May, go away aphorism for the markets. And the same thing is kind of true in gold. So June has long been the weakest month of the year for gold seasonally. Now it's important to realize that seasonality is kind of like a tailwind or headwind for gold. It's not a primary driver. Primary drivers are fundamentals, technicals, sentiment. But seasonality can definitely add on to those. And so, yeah, June has been the weakest month of the year for gold for the 25 years I've been studying it, Andy. It's really interesting.
Yeah. So what's interesting to me, we've had these great fundamentals, if you would, well, for a long time, but we've had this great run up. And then it looked to me like gold was significantly overbought, even though we were very, very strong, if you would, almost parabolic going into the summer. And then almost right on cue, the June season hits as the seasonality sits, and we get a really good pullback. And we really needed that, technically speaking. So, talk about that, just the technicals here and how they really worked with, again, the June season here.
Yeah, it was really a fortuitous setup in a lot of ways. Back in April, as you were talking about, gold almost did shoot parabolic. There's ways to measure that. One I like, it's really simple, is take the price of gold and divide it by its 200-day moving average. And when that multiple shows how fast gold is advancing. And you can look at that historically and see like when is gold getting extremely overbought? When is it dangerous? When is there likely to be a sharp sell-off, a pullback, or a correction, or even a bear market? And back in mid-April, Andy, gold got stretched to 18.8% above its 200-day moving average. And that's extreme. My threshold for extremely overbought is 15% above its 200 EMA. The last time gold got 19%-ish above was back in August 2020. That was after the post-pandemic lockdown gold upleg, which is massive. It was like 40% from March to early August. And gold stayed above 19%, more than 90% above its 200 EMA for like 2 weeks then. But then it collapsed into a major sell-off that eventually grew into a big correction, say in the order of 19%. And so gold hadn't been as overbought in April 2024 since August 2020, and it was a big deal. And I was getting really nervous about that. I was writing in my newsletter to our subscribers about that, and it just was a big problem. The thing is, when prices rally too far too fast, it sucks in too many available near-term buyers too soon. And we all have finite capital. We all have so much money we can throw at the markets at any given time. And so when prices go parabolic, when too much greed is generated, it kind of exhausts near-term buying firepower. It sucks all the buying firepower from the future to the present. And at that point, you're going to have a sharp pullback, pullback defined as 4% to 10%, or a bigger correction, which is 10% to 20%. And so I was pretty nervous about gold. And I think everybody who's followed the markets for a while was back in mid-April. And there are two ways to work off extreme overboughtness and greed. One is the classic pullback and correction, a sell-off. You know, when prices sell off, greed dissipates, fear gradually rises and takes its place, and that rebalances sentiment. The second way, which takes much longer but is less painful, is a high consolidation. Rather than fall sharply, gold just drifts sideways. And that's exactly what's happened since mid-April or even early April. Gold has been trending in a trading range between $2,300 to $2,400 an ounce, and it's consolidated high. And since that's lasted for a few months now, that's gradually worked off overboughtness and greed. It hasn't been replaced by fear because there's been two pullbacks, as you said. One was about 4% and one was about 7%. Gold made a secondary higher record high in mid-May before it pulled back again. But these are fairly minor as far as pullbacks go. Andy, I think entering summer, gold was 12% above its 200 EMA, which is a lot better than 19%. And it got down to like 9% above at the bottom of this latest pullback in early June. And so it's been awesome to have this high consolidation to bleed off this extreme greed and overboughtness. And you're absolutely right. The summer doldrums played in perfectly with this. And actually, I think gold has shown unusual strength this June, Andy, because it was so crazy, extremely overbought heading into the summer doldrums. It would have been totally probable to see a bigger sell-off than normal this June. And also, American stock investors haven't been buying gold yet. You can see that through the holdings of the mighty GLD and IEU gold ETFs. They're the biggest in the world by far. They dominate the global gold ETF space. And this week, the combined holdings of GLD and IEU, they're actually just above a deep 4.5-year secular low that was hit in early March. And so American stock investors have zero interest in gold right now, mainly because of the AI stock bubble led by NVIDIA, of course. You know, NVIDIA is definitely going parabolic, extremely parabolic. So yeah, the summer gold was fitting perfectly with this high consolidation. And the fact gold didn't sell off more so far in June is just amazing. I believe that means there has to be more central bank buying and Chinese investor buying, which is what drove that near parabolic breakout, that remarkable breakout surge back in March and April. So yeah, it's really neat how the summer doldrums dovetailed into gold's high consolidation this year. Pretty extraordinary.
It is. Talk about the sentiment, if you would. So, meaning, what are the, I guess, what are you seeing as the psychology? Are people still not interested in it? And when I talk about sentiments, probably Western sentiment here. What are you seeing with that?
You know, it's interesting. As a newsletter guy for a quarter century, I have a really unique insight into sentiment via feedback. You know, people write and they talk about the markets. They have questions. They have concerns. They're excited. They're not excited. They're bullish. They're bearish. And so I get a lot of anecdotal feedback. So sentiment was, and also another thing is newsletter sales. When people are excited about gold, you know, selling a gold stock newsletter, my sales just soar. When people aren't excited, they flag, of course, you know. So it's very tied into the market cycles of gold.
There's
Back
so much of
in
an irony there.
I know, I know. You know, you should want to buy a newsletter when stocks are low and you can buy in really low and cheap, not when things are high after they've already rallied.
Right.
Yeah, the whole
It's
contrarian
worth the
thing.
sell.
Yep. I've struggled with that for a quarter century now. I can't figure it out. Trying to get
Yeah.
people to buy newsletters at the right time and not get too crazy at the wrong time. But anyway,
Right.
that's how human psychology works. But yeah, back in early April and mid-April, people were getting pretty excited. You know, gold stock sentiment never got as excited as gold. The extreme overboughtness kind of threshold for gold stocks over the past 5 years has been the main gold stock ETF, GDX, stretched 35% above its 200 EMA. And the highest GDX got in mid-April or early May was like 25% above, Andy. So gold stocks didn't hit the extremely overbought threshold. But sentiment was definitely getting greedy. People were really excited about gold. There was lots of talk about, you know, really high prices falling. Like gold was around 2,400, say in mid-April. People were talking about 2,700, even 3,000 in the near term. When people have those crazy upside targets, like another 20, 30% above current prices in the near-term future, you just know greed's getting out of control. And greed tracks overboughtness, oversoldness. So the more something extends above its 200-day moving average, the faster and farther it's rallied in a shorter span of time, the more greed that generates. And so, yeah, sales were booming. People were really excited. all day, every day, I have CNBC or Bloomberg on in my office. And, you know, it was amazing how many gold stories they both were running. You know, the more record highs gold makes or any market makes, the more the financial media talks about it and the more bullish that financial media coverage is. So I saw tons of discussions about gold and gold stocks. It's really unusual because normally the mainstream financial networks ignore gold. You know, it's just not something they're excited about. It's too peripheral, too alternative. But that's definitely tapered off in the past few months. Since mid-April, there's just been a gradual decline in newsletter sales and people excited about gold and in the mainstream financial media coverage. And so I really think the high consolidation is doing its necessary work. It's bleeding off the excessive greed. It's not really replacing with fear as much as apathy, is my perception, Andy. You know, people just don't care anymore. You know, the U.S. stock markets are making tons of new records as NVIDIA skyrockets. This week, it eclipsed both Microsoft and Apple as the biggest company in the world, $3.3 trillion market cap. And so people are just excited about the stock market bubble, and they don't care about gold at this point, which is good because we want gold to bleed off that greed to work through that extreme overboughtness. And that's pretty much happened. So we're set up for a nice autumn rally now, which is pretty exciting.
And that was my next question then, is that what you're looking for then? It's just a continued consolidation here through the summer and then going into the fall, getting a good significant rally then again.
That's exactly what I expect, Andy. Absolutely. So for most, I look at bull market seasonality for gold because prices behave differently in bull and bear markets. In the past 25 years, gold was in bull markets about 20% of the time. 20 of those years, 80% of the time, and bear markets about the other 20% of the time, 5 years. And so during the past 20 years of the past 25 when gold was in bull markets, for the vast majority of that span, gold tended to bottom seasonally in late June to early July. So we're looking at the last week in June, maybe into the 4th of July type timeframe for gold to bottom. Lately, there's been a couple of big gold rallies in the summer, and that kind of dragged up the seasonal average to be early June for gold's bottom. But I still think late June to early July is the highest probability time for gold to bottom seasonally. Then gold tends to rally throughout July, not a big rally, but you know, a few percent. Then August, it starts to accelerate. September really accelerates. And so, yeah, I'm absolutely looking for gold buying to return and for gold to start moving higher. And I think the single most bullish factor for gold is the fact that we talked about earlier that American stock investors have done no noticeable allocations to gold at all. I know a ton of portfolio managers after being in this business a long time, and the highest allocation of gold and gold stocks I'm aware of, and these are people who are aware of my work, so they're more receptive to gold than the average portfolio manager. I know one guy has like 2% of his clients' portfolios in gold and gold stocks. You know, it's so low. And if you take the market capitalization of the gold bullion holdings of GLD and IAU, just the total value of those, and divide that by the market capitalization of all 500 S&P 500 stocks, you get like an implied portfolio allocation of gold from American stock investors of on the order of 0.4, 0.5%. So gold investment's nothing right now. So I think it's almost certain at some point that American stock investors will get excited about gold and start chasing it. And that could start happening as soon as the next few months and really, really amplify gold's coming autumn and then winter rallies after that. Yeah, I think gold has huge upside potential since everybody isn't fully into this this amazing upleg yet.
Got it. So I don't want to give away too much of your secret sauce. We'll save that for your subscribers. But I would like to just ask is you're looking to accumulate then on weakness, a continued weakness here through the summer doldrums that you would say that would be a good strategy, just to paraphrase.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. So what we've been doing on the trading front, we have two newsletters, a monthly and a weekly, and I have trading books in both. And we ratcheted up our trailing stop losses in those gold stock trades when gold got extremely overbought back in April. And that most of our positions, like 3/4 of our positions, were able to weather this high consolidation without getting stopped out. But about 1/4 of our trades got stopped out at big realized gains, which is always great. I'm always happy to realize big gains. And but I've been waiting for a couple months to reallocate into those positions. So we've been sitting in cash just in the stopped out trades. And I was always kind of waiting for this late June, early July timeframe. I just wrote in our weekly yesterday that we're probably going to start reallocating to refill our trading books next week or the week after. And so I've been researching gold stocks, trying to figure out what to buy for this next round. But yeah, I think this coming period, the next couple of weeks, is probably the best seasonal buying opportunity probability-wise. You know, once again, seasonals are tailwinds and headwinds. They're not primary drivers. You know, some big news could happen that could really push gold sharply lower or higher that we're not aware of. But from an averages standpoint, the next couple of weeks should be the best time of the summer to add to gold stock positions. Absolutely.
Got it. And are you looking at the bigger names or the ETFs or the smaller names? And certainly don't name drop, but I'm just curious about, I guess, the scale. What are you most interested in?
I've never been an ETF guy. The ETFs are fine if someone just wants to make a small allocation of gold stocks, doesn't want to put in the time and effort to figure out individual gold stocks. There's lots of problems with the bigger gold stocks, Andy. The larger the gold stock, the bigger their mining base, the harder it is to grow production. And production growth is prized above everything else by investors around the world. And so there's this class of gold miners called the super majors, say over 2 million ounces a year, just massive. And they've been struggling with depletion for decades. They just can't overcome it unless they acquire other companies, which costs a ton of money for their shareholders. And like GDX is dominated by the super majors, which I call dead weight. They're almost half of its market capitalization. They don't rally much when gold rallies because they're so big. They have large market capitalizations, those huge production bases. I prefer mid-tier and junior gold miners. That's what we specialize in at Zeal. And so I'm looking for smaller gold miners. Mid-tiers are defined as 300,000 to 1 million ounces a year production. And the lower on that scale, the more growth opportunities they have. These companies are better able to grow their production consistently by adding a new mine. They usually have several mines compared to dozens for the super majors. Their mines are usually picked to operate at lower costs. They're more focused on them. They're more profitable because they're lower costs. So yeah, I would recommend juniors and mid-tiers if your viewers have the opportunity to do a little bit of research on them. But if they don't, GDX is fine. GDXJ, which is called the junior gold miners ETF, is way superior to GDX. It's actually a mid-tier gold miners ETF technically because there's very few juniors in its holdings. But that kicks out the deadweight super majors that really hold GDX back. And so GDXJ is probably the best single gold stock investment that people can make if they want to buy individual stocks. We have a portfolio of 10 individual gold stocks in our monthly newsletter and 20 in our weekly newsletter. And we trade those as gold goes up and down, try to ride the cycles. But yeah, GDXJ is fine as a substitute if people don't want to do that homework.
Got it. Talk to me just briefly here about silver. Silver, it looks like, is following gold as it should. We've had just in the last week or 2 weeks a good sell-off again, and that's a very healthy and something that I've been looking for. But yeah, talk to me about silver, what you're looking for here going into the summer doldrums and going into the fall.
Well, silver's been amazing. You were talking about sentiment earlier, Andy, and I think of silver as a gold sentiment gauge. Traders tend to buy silver when gold is already rallying. And so silver tends to amplify gold moves both up and down. And I talked about American stock investors, GLD and IAU share buying being a big driver of gold normally when the Chinese and central banks aren't playing like they are now, which is awesome. But the other two main drivers of gold normally are speculators covering silver futures shorts they have. And then speculators covering gold futures shorts and speculators buying gold futures longs. So gold futures trading is a major driver of gold, but it's also a major driver of silver. The futures market allows speculators to have just incredible leverage. To gold, it's not uncommon to have 25, 30 times leverage to gold and gold futures. And silver is driven by silver futures trading as well. And the thing that's about silver is really interesting is silver just shot up, way outpaced gold. And people were really excited about it. And that was a reflection of the positive, the euphoric almost sentiment in gold. But silver futures got to extreme positions. Like the silver futures longs were the highest seen in many years. I don't have the number on top of my head, but say 3 or 4 years, a high in silver futures longs. And those silver futures traders, just like gold futures traders, they have finite capital firepower. They'd pretty much exhausted their buying firepower based on their historical trading ranges. And so silver was really overbought. It was The silver futures guys had bought about as much as they possibly could. And so silver was due for a sharper sell-off than gold. And I warned our subscribers about that 6 or 8 weeks ago. And that's what's happened during the doldrums. Silver's corrected more than gold has. I don't have the exact number for you, but it's down a lot. But that's worked off a lot of the excessive silver futures long positions. It's worked off the silver overboughtness and the greed. And so I think silver, once again, once we get through this high consolidation, this pullback stage, silver should once again outpace gold in July and August and September. And so, yeah, I'm really, really positive, really bullish about silver. One more thing about silver. I was just looking this morning. Over my shoulder here, there's a spreadsheet of a bunch of market data. And interestingly, we talked about GLD and IAU holdings being near a 4.5-year low, just absolutely terrible. No one wants it. Well, the silver ETF, SLV, that's seen huge buying in June, meaning that as silver futures traders were selling their silver futures, American stock investors are buying SLV, which is a really encouraging sign. Silver's been weak this month, and so I'm really surprised to see big builds in SLV this month. I don't know what to make of it yet, but I find it really fascinating.
That is interesting. So, well, let's land the plane here. If give us some final thoughts here going, and I'd love to have you on again towards in the fall sometime. But yeah, give us some final thoughts here. And people that are interested in your work and would like to potentially do business with you, how do they reach you?
Yeah, I'd love to get back together with you. I really enjoy our chat, Sandy. Thanks for this opportunity. Everybody needs portfolio allocations in gold, in the gold stocks, in my opinion. It doesn't have to be huge. You don't have to go crazy about it. But if you have stock positions, no allocations in gold and gold stocks, you should consider adding something. Buy GLD, the gold ETF, buy GDXJ, that mid-tier gold miners ETF. Just do something, a percent or two, 5%. Don't get crazy about it. But by establishing an allocation, you diversify your portfolio a little bit. And also you'll start to follow gold and gold stocks. The opportunities here are absolutely immense. This is one of the highest potential, most volatile sectors there is. People can double, triple, quadruple their wealth during big gold uplegs in the smaller gold miners. In the next couple of weeks here, late June, early July, are a great time to establish positions. If you want more guidance, we have a couple of newsletters, monthly and weekly. Our website is Zeal, ZEALLC.com. We publish free weekly web essays. We have email alerts if you want to know when we publish new stuff. Yeah, just swing by. Our newsletters are really inexpensive, about $10 an issue, so everybody can afford them. And yeah, if you're interested in gold, then everybody should have some allocation. Check us out. Thanks so much, Andy.
Thank you, Adam. I will put all of this in the show notes and below in both the YouTube show as well as the podcasts that go out on Apple and Spotify. Again, I am a huge fan. We've talked offline. I've been following you and reading your stuff for nearly 25 years. I don't know exact amount, but it's been over 20 years I've been following.
Greetings.
It's just a treat for me to chat with you via Zoom. Yeah, it's just a real treat. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Have a great day, and we'll talk again soon.